Is standing in line your idea of summertime fun? Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig, in for Anu Anand. Good morning. First to Singapore, which saw its biggest economic contraction in nearly 7 years. Growth plunged at an annualized 3.4% pace in the second quarter, far worse than the slight pickup expected. Manufacturing, which accounts for one-fifth of the economy, was among the hardest-hit sectors. The BBC's Monica Miller explains how the U.S.-China trade war factors in.
When you look at Singapore, it's a trade-dependent economy, and we don't grow anything here, but we make things. And the U.S.-China trade war is really having an impact on this. Countries depended on selling those high-tech exports to places all over the world. These orders just aren't coming in at the pace that they need them to.
Are these figures today a sign of what's to come for the region?
That's the feeling that a lot of analysts have. They're looking at Singapore like a canary in the coal mine and really a sign of a deepening manufacturer slowdown across the region. We're looking now also very carefully at exports from South Korea, which is similar. It makes a lot of electronics and it's having a hard time right now getting them off their shelves and off their container ships. But, you know, the one interesting country that keeps popping up and we talk a lot about these days is Vietnam. You know, this is the one country where it seems to be, I should say, benefiting somewhat in terms of where our companies going to build their factories. But, really, if Singapore, a very wealthy country that has done incredibly well during other tough economic periods, is suffering, analysts are not feeling particularly confident about what we're going to see in the weeks, months and years to come.
Monica Miller there from Singapore. Let's do the numbers. The Turkish lira is lower after the country received its first shipment of a Russian air defense system. That sets Ankara up for a showdown with Washington that could lead to sanctions and expulsion from NATO's fighter jet program. And shares of brewing giant AB InBev are down nearly 2% after reports the company will delay its Asia listing after running into difficulty determining the price. Greece's newly elected prime minister, Kyriakos Mitsotakis, faces a series of economic challenges after his center-right New Democracy Party's election victory last weekend. He takes over from leftist Syriza Party, which accepted pension cuts and higher taxes in return for an international bailout. After a decade of economic austerity, he outlined his priorities in an interview with the BBC.
My number one priority is to restore the Greek economy to an aggressive growth path. And this growth cannot come through consumption and excessive borrowing. We tried that. It failed. We all know the results. It has to be a growth led by investment, private investment, foreign investment, domestic investment, innovation, and entrepreneurship. So the jobs that I envision to create in Greece will be private sector jobs. And that is why my number one priority is to make Greece an attractive destination for capital. That means, first of all, you need a stable, pro-reform government. I think we have that. We've ticked that box. But then, of course, you need to lower taxes and you need to drastically impact the regulatory environment. Greece is still a very confusing and complicated place to do business. This has to change, and it has to change very quickly.
That's Greece's new Prime Minister, Kyriakos Mitsotakis. Breezy 70-degree days pass us summer in the UK, and I'm not complaining. The beautiful weather means big outdoor music concerts and sporting events, and to get in, even bigger lines, or queues, as they're called here. Lining up tests the limits of our patience, but lots of corporate cash is poured into making the process more pleasant. The BBC's Elizabeth Hodson went to what's arguably the world's most famous line at Wimbledon, where many tennis fans enjoy the wait.
So tired. Tired of waiting, tired of waiting for you.
I've just entered the grounds, not of Wimbledon itself, but Wimbledon Park, which is where the queue starts if you want to buy tickets on the day. I've been handed a 31-page booklet called A Guide to Queuing, which states that, for many, the queue is as much part of the Wimbledon experience as the tennis itself. But surely waiting 6, 7, 8 hours or even overnight would push most people to their limits, wouldn't it?
We have been here since 10 to 8. We left home at 5 o'clock this morning. We've been the last 2 years and we love the queuing experience. It's very organised, it's very British. We like to see people try to push in and get pushed back because they're not in the right number. We enjoy that very much.
The people we want to see play tomorrow, so we decided to actually camp. And luckily enough, they had people who left tents from yesterday.
And sleeping bags.
So we lucked out.
And so we're here, and we're going to stay all night.
This word queue, I understand now why it's such a big deal for the British. actually, I think it's kind of an enjoyable experience.
Yes, it is.
And we really appreciate how they've perfected this process over the decades that they've been queuing.
Yes.
The UK is a country of professional queuers, but how about companies? Because time is money, after all. And who better to ask than Professor Dick Larson from MIT, who also goes by the name of Dr. Q.
Disney is the Machiavellian expert internationally in queuing because they realized early on it's not just the statistics of the delay. The primary thing is the psychology of the delay. And Disney figured this out ingeniously. For instance, you join a Disney line and it says, well, if the line's out to here, you may expect to wait an hour. But they've deliberately overestimated that. A 60-minute may be really just a 45-minute waiting. A young couple with young kids gets in the line, and 45 minutes later, the husband says to the wife, we're 15 minutes ahead of schedule, and they're happy queuers.
But I got the sense that for the Wimbledon queuers, seeing a bit of tennis and making some new friends was reward enough. In London, I'm the BBC's Elizabeth Hodson for Marketplace.
Finally, while we're on the topic of summertime fun, Instagrammers packing inflatable flamingos hoping to find the perfect selfie are flocking to a turquoise lake in Siberia. There's one problem, though. The water is actually a power plant's waste site. The company warned visitors that while the water's not poisonous, the pH can cause allergic reactions, and the ash dump at the bottom can be, quote, difficult to get out of. Think I'll stick to an ordinary beach this summer. In London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.